Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Audio bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by AOL Music and Spinner.com, where you can get free MP3s, exclusive interviews, and more. Video bandwidth for TWiT is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 239 for March 15th, 2010. Meetup. This Week in Tech is brought to you by GoToMeeting, the affordable way to meet with clients and colleagues for your free 30-day trial. Visit GoToMeeting.com/TWiT. And by Audible.com. To download two free audiobooks of your choice, go to Audible.com/TWiT2. And don't forget to follow Audible on Twitter at Audible_com. And by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to publish a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 10% off your new account, go to Squarespace.com/TWiT. It's time for TWiT. We are live from the Texas Co-working Center in beautiful Austin, Texas. Hello, everybody. Yay! Wow. It sounds like a crowd of 3,400 people, the same number that were at the Dignation party yesterday. Right. You think I could crowd surf this group?
No.
Be a bad idea, wouldn't it? I don't think they could hold me. To my right, Mr. Tom Merritt from Buzz Out Loud. Hey, Tom.
Hey, Leo.
Great to see you. Welcome.
Thank you.
Molly Wood is also here, your cohort from Buzz Out Loud. Hi, Molly.
Hello. Good to be here.
Thanks for coming.
We've never been on TWiT together before.
What? Is that true?
We were sort of on TWiT at CES together.
CES, you were together.
Oh, it's only ever on the road sharing a microphone.
Right.
I think I said same thing on that one.
It's our traveling road show.
But you were right on that one. Yeah. No, we do try to separate you. We don't want to make it the Buzz Out Loud TWiT. Yeah. But it's good to have you both. Also, Sarah Lane is here. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Great to see you.
Great to
Yeah, talk right into the microphone.
Great to be here.
I know you're a treacherous little ball of steel,
Hello.
But you have to work the mic still.
Okay.
And look at Robert Scoble's wearing his tattoo shirt. It looks like you're the illustrated man.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
Yeah. Your wrists are very wrinkled.
I sat down and I was like, dude, nobody told me Scoble had sleeves. How did I not notice that before?
And they're literally sleeves. Yeah.
There's a tattoo parlor here on 6th Street that spells tattoo with one O. And I thought, boy, that's not really a good advertisement for a tattoo parlor. You can't even spell the word tattoo. You really don't want to go in there and get, you know.
Permanent. Maybe it's a tattoo removal place.
My Mather loves me. You know, that's not gonna work. There's Dr. Kiki. Hey, Dr. Kiki.
Hi, Leo.
So you all are here. Why? What is going on? Is this some event in town?
There's some event. It seems to be kind of big.
Woke up in Texas.
I know. Austin, Barbecue. South by Southwest.
Yeah, but actually, you got to sleep in Texas.
You're here for meat? We're gonna have meat. Barbecue is very big. We're gonna have a little party at a Brazilian place after this. But I heard that this is a barbecue town. Oh, yeah. Scoble said we should have gone to a barbecue place.
Maybe we can have Brazilian barbecue.
Yeah. It is Brazilian barbecue.
There we go. Then
I discovered yesterday that you can actually get meat drunk. So I think I actually have a little meat hangover today. I was swaying. I'm not gonna lie.
Oh, it's okay. So there are a lot of different interpretations of meat drunk. So what you're saying is you got drunk on meat.
I'm not touching that one.
See, now we talking about. I didn't. Never mind. I'll just be right here with the coffee.
So, how does that feel when you're drunk on meat?
I was swaying and slightly delirious. I had my body weight in barbecue yesterday.
Wow, that's quite awesome. A bit. That's like half a steer.
Were you at the Dignation party?
Thanks, Leo. that's actually
not what I meant.
Half a steer. Okay.
It wasn't a whole steer.
What's a steer? Like about a ton? No. Super.
Were you at the Dignation party?
No, because I couldn't be lifted for crowd surfing.
Because if you were, I would say you weren't stoned on meat.
That was a wild party. That was a very wild party. At Stubbs Barbecue, another barbecue place. In fact, I did have a little Stubbs Barbecue because Tony Shea of Zappos has a party bus. That was stocked with barbecue from Stubbs. That was fun. Did you go? Yeah. It's the happiness bus or something. Yeah. You're a VHP,
was it
a very happy
bus
person.
Ride? Yeah. You've been on the bus. Was it enjoyable?
What happens on the bus stays on the bus.
Let me put it this way: it's a bus that comes with its own bartender. Robert warned me. Well, not me, but his entire Twitter following about overconsumption of alcohol here at South by Southwest. Like, you're not drinking at South by Southwest.
Nothing. I've had half of a beer so far.
Wow. Nice. Yeah. Why is that?
Because I went a little crazy last year.
Well, we've just learned you can get meat drunk, so maybe a little later on you'd like to try that. And after you get meat drunk, you can crowd surf. That's a thrill and a half. That was really fun. I got to do that at the Dignation party.
You didn't break anything bodily or equipment-wise.
No.
Yeah, how'd it go? Yeah,
nor did I get groped. I thought I might get groped, but I didn't.
I don't know.
People were respectful overall with the lifting.
I think when there's that many hands on your butt, you really can't call it groped.
Yeah. It's somebody said out in the hallway that they touched your butt and they don't want to do it again.
I was flexing. I'm clenching, is that the word?
Clenching.
Now the rumors of your buns of steel will go far.
Well, you couldn't say it's groping your butt anymore than you could say the floor gropes your butt when you lie down. I mean, it's really like a kind of a wavy mattress.
Was it your first time?
Why, you've done this yourself?
No, I'm asking if it's your first time.
Yes, it is.
Unless you're really a party girl, girls don't really go in for crowd surfing.
No. Then you will get groped.
I was talking with people about it last night and saying, well, who would actually do this? And like all the girls I asked were
a guy.
Like, no,
but
don't
a guy
think
hopes
so.
To get
especially
groped.
Not with the dig boy crowd.
Yeah.
No.
Absolutely not. There were a large number of women in the dig audience. There were quite a few girls there.
I've ever noticed at a live show.
Yeah. South by Southwest is nice because it's not a bunch of fat, overweight guys like me. It's Robert. There's a lot of women. It's a social. Mm-hmm. It's really a social media conference more than anything else. Mm-hmm. This is my first time here. Is this feel like a typical South by Southwest?
It's far bigger. More busier. It's
yeah.
a busier.
Yeah. Oh, really? 50%. Supposedly, this was the first year that interactive registration exceeded music. Which is, I mean, it started as a music conference festival, so unbelievable, 50%.
Get right up to the mic, because these mics are just not...
50% more interactive folks here than last year.
Wow.
I mean, if you walk down 6th Street after 8 p.m.
Two years ago, there was only one or two parties that had lines. Every party has lines now. Mm-hmm.
I remember being here when I lived here in 1993, and the music was it. There was the film conference, which meant you could go to the Dolby Theater and see a bunch of films you wouldn't be able to normally see, and there was really no problem getting into any of them. And then there was the CD-ROM conference. They called it South by Southwest Multimedia, and it was a bunch of CD-ROM authors in the convention center for a couple days. And now to have it actually outdraw the music is pretty mind-blowing.
Yeah.
Do you think social media will go the way of CD-ROMs?
Is this a
flash in the pan?
I think it's going to be a step towards whatever comes next, the semantic web and other things. I mean, people are naturally social, and so sociability? I can't say the word. Just make up a word here. Yeah. That's going to be a huge part of everything on the web going forward. So it's not going to go away. It'll just be folded in to the origami of the future.
The social media part of it feels like a little bit of a bubble right now. I mean, you have
everybody you meet is a social media expert,
or
consultant.
I have friends.
Like, no offense,
who's social media social
expert? You're a guru. Like, really, social media guru? Come on,
there are a lot of them.
That's a job. It's a job. Like, that's a bubble. If that's a job, this is a bubble.
That's a bubble. Yeah.
No, but there was that PR guy who wrote the big article.
What are you talking about? That's my job.
I really like your sleeves.
Sponsored by Rackspace.
It's not just a few people's job. It's not a specialized thing now. It sort of feels like everyone is just like, well, I'm on Twitter, so boom, guru.
Yeah, if you don't know what to put on your card, you put that.
I have 500 followers
full of people,
social media.
Right.
Yeah.
But there is some stuff that is not a bubble. I mean, it feels to me, maybe you guys would like to correct me on this, but it feels to me that there's this real creative surge that is kind of the culmination of inexpensive digital hardware and content creation tools and this incredible distribution media of the internet. And everybody here seems to be starting a company or creating a website or a blog or podcast. There's a lot of creativity here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why it's bigger, is because there are more people doing this.
Yeah, mm-hmm. There's also a lot of criticism as well, though. People coming in who have been going to South by Southwest. This is my first year as well, so I don't have anything to compare it to. But a lot of criticism as to, oh, well, you know, the panel sessions aren't as creative as they used to be. There are a lot of people who are the web posers. You know, people aren't, this isn't the thing that people aren't maybe getting what they thought they would get out right. of it. I don't know if what everyone else is thinking about that, like what you guys are thinking.
One of my staff went to a panel on, what was it called, Lisa? How to Do Things for Less. And they were showing how to use Google Maps. And it's like, anybody who's here, I think, knows how to use Google Maps. Yeah.
You don't have to waste all that money on paper maps anymore.
Exactly.
You can do things for less.
Amazing.
Well, you know, it's funny. I used to do panels here every year, and then we started doing Buzz Out Loud instead. But whenever I was doing the panels, there was always this long explanation from South by Southwest about what makes a good panel, including stay on topic.
Yeah.
Actually talk about what you described. And you know, they can only do so much. They can't force people to do it. And it's a big problem. People drift from the thing that they thought they wanted to talk about.
Mm-hmm. There are also a lot of panels. I mean, there are so many options. There's
that's frustrating
10 panels
to
choose from. Yeah, that's always annoying. Bothered me because I have to choose, and I don't necessarily know what I'm getting beforehand.
Keep in mind, a lot of people want to do a panel, so they get in for free.
Right.
And so it's a big competition to become a panelist. And me, I don't want to work, so I don't want to do panels.
There are also some bad panels. I mean, I'm not going to call out any specific panels, but I've been to a couple panels where it's like it was all I could do to just stay off my iPhone.
I was at a god-awful panel.
And some panels end up turning into marketing for a company. So you go in thinking that you're going to get information out, and you find out learning about, oh, this company is not, I don't know, just, you just don't want to be there after a while because you're being sold to. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I went to the Mark Cuban versus Avner Ronan panel. He's the boxy guy. Mm-hmm. And Mark Cuban, of course, the guy who started Broadcast.com, sold it to Yahoo for $1 billion. And it was so annoying. Because
the panel?
Yeah. Well, the first thing Mark Cuban says is, how much money did you make, Avi? And then, we don't have a revenue model. Well, I was profitable from day one.
Ah.
And it was just really, it was very annoying.
What is everyone else getting out of that?
Yeah, nothing. Yeah. I was getting nothing. But fortunately, the fire alarm went off.
I'm sure it was an accident.
I don't know. They claimed that something went wrong with a water pump, but they evacuated the entire convention center.
Oh, right.
And I'm wondering how many people actually went back to that panel afterwards.
It was a good excuse to get out.
It was a reason to get
out. Actually, Leah, one of the things that's cooking underneath the surface here is the future of TV. We haven't seen a lot of it come out yet. Like, I was sitting next to the head engineer for Comcast, who's building a social TV system where you check in on TV shows and tell your friends, hey, I'm watching Lost or I'm
that
watching.
That makes a lot of sense.
And that's coming out in a month or two. But there's several of those that are cooking here. That you know, if you get in the right party or the right dinner, you'll hear about them. But they're not out yet.
Right.
Sort of like Foursquare last year. I kept hearing about this Foursquare thing, but AT&T last year was down, so I couldn't even try it out. It came out here last year, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's where they released it. But I didn't have an opportunity to really use it with anybody last year. And this year, it's everywhere, right?
We just saw last week articles from the awards show saying their ratings are up significantly, and they think, I don't know if this is true, that it's because of social media, because of people tweeting, I'm watching the Grammys, and the kind of group tweeting. Do you think that's true? Does that make sense?
I think so.
You watch more. I certainly was interested in the Grammys because I was watching people diss them.
Yeah. Well, that's the nice thing about something like Twitter, is that all of a sudden people start making these references to something funny that just happened, and you want to be part of it.
Yes.
You turn on the TV so you can join the conversation.
That actually,
I bet it's working for movies, too. I feel like there's a lot more pressure now. Like, if there's a big movie that's coming out that has a lot of geek interest, I feel like I need to see it immediately,
right,
because otherwise I'm going to be behind the Twitter curve and I'm going to get spoiled. And, you know, it's like, it's this whole kind of new level of social peer pressure that I think is definitely, I'm sure it's helping TV. Although I did see then NBC try to congratulate themselves on their time delay by saying that had the time delay, social media could sort of pimp the Olympics for them. And I was like, no, misread.
Yeah.
You're not in fact, getting it right.
No.
All the anger was coming from social media about the Olympics. That's where it all came from.
So you're saying the live things are getting bigger ratings, but what about delayed? What about things like Lost or?
Well, certainly Lost does. I mean, everybody. I knew.
Have you seen ratings bumps on those too?
I don't know, but
I'm watching 24 because all my friends kept talking about it, and it got me interested in the show. Right.
I wonder if this is the new way, whereas before it used to be the television that the family sat down in front of where you all had this shared experience. And now because of social media, when our media is splintering in all these different directions, maybe the social media will start bringing those shared experiences back in.
I think so.
AT&T did keep the network up this time.
Yeah, I've had no problems.
Yeah. It's working.
This is actually the talk about differences between South by Southwest. This is the first South by Southwest where most of the major stuff I want to use is working.
Yeah.
You know, remember the last 3 years, Twitter has been down every time when we come here.
Twitter was down yesterday, though, for
was
a
it?
While.
It wasn't down for me.
One error,
it was up and down.
But it's mostly up. Foursquare and GoWall are both most. I haven't had a single error message on those services, and that's remarkable. And when Twitter came out here in 2007, by the way, it was after your show that it got hot.
Really, I think your show. Have some credit for that?
I totally think so, because everybody who was coming
Twitter.
To South by Southwest heard about it on your show and started using it, going into the show and started talking about it.
Yeah.
Nice. But it was down all the time. I was sitting next to Evan in 2007 going, why isn't your service up? You know, and this year it's up.
Yeah.
Well, and AT&T really staked a lot on it. We were talking about this on Buzz Out Loud today. It's like they really realized that they could not afford, just PR-wise, like another geek apocalypse like they had last year. You cannot have everybody who's on the cutting edge of smartphone purchasing and being, you know, online on a smartphone device talking about how crappy AT&T is. So they really doubled down on it, and it's paying off.
They did. One of the execs pointed to all the portable towers at one of the parties I was at, and they put a lot of portable towers and a lot of brand-new antenna technology and brand-new software for the network and brand-new trunk lines that they brought into the town. So,
well, that's great for PR, and it'll keep them from getting some bad press, but it doesn't fix the problems elsewhere because they can't bring in portable towers every single place that they have issues.
So. True, and in fact, the same executive said, see those antennas? They're 6 foot. And in San Francisco, we're only allowed to use 2 or 3 foot antennas, and we can get 6 times more capacity on these 6 foot antennas, but the city doesn't let us put them in. He said, you know, the geeks need to help us out and help get cities to put more networking infrastructure.
Well, now they tell us.
To be fair to AT&T,
and I bashed AT&T consistently for a year because every event I go to, this is the first major event that it stayed up. At CES, I was walking around with 3 cell phones and only Verizon was up, right? The growth in the iPhone and the new smartphone device and the data usage that we all exhibit on these phones is many, many times higher than they ever predicted. Even Apple. I have a friend who runs the Apple application team, the app team. He says, when we initially pitched it to the execs to add an app store, we thought we would sell X, and they've sold 100 times X. The number of device things that we do with these iPhones is way off the charts for what they were expecting. And so I cut them a little bit.
Yeah, but they've known that for 3 years now.
True. True.
I mean, there still are studies that say they're $5 billion behind an infrastructure investment behind Verizon. That's what it would cost them just to catch up to Verizon.
No, that's not true. That's not true. If you took every
iPhone, I read
iPhone
that on
user,
the internet.
If you took every it's not true. There's a lot of things on the internet that you shouldn't believe. Yeah, if you took every iPhone user and put them on Verizon, Verizon would go down instantly. Verizon's networks could not keep up with iPhone users.
Is there any truth to what I've read? Some theories too that the way the iPhone maintains a connection actually exacerbates the issue, particularly for iPhone users?
There probably is something to that. The usage model of the iPhone is completely... I look at how people use phones. We use data on these things so much more than other phone users. And by the way, that if you talk to Google executives, their stats show that is true,
Google. But all the studies say that the data is not AT&T's problem. That the voice network is what's so fragile, and that's where they haven't invested in the infrastructure the way that Verizon has. You're right. If you migrated everybody over all at once to Verizon, they would have problems too.
When you go out on a tower, I was taken out on a tower. There's one fiber optic to the tower. So if you're saturating that link into the tower or whatever, it's gone. There's only so many connections that it can keep. It's a Wi-Fi problem. We have these problems with Wi-Fi at every conference, right? It's expensive and difficult to deal with a lot of people who are all using their devices and all using a lot of data at the same time.
So was there an app that won in the way that Foursquare won last year or Twitter won in 2007? Was there a killer app? Was GoWalla a killer app for
GoWalla? It's interesting. I've gone from 100 friends on GoWalla to just about 1,700 right now.
Damn,
in
that means
four
I gotta catch
days.
Up with you.
So GoWalla has certainly come on strong, but I have 7,000 friends on Foursquare. And, you know, so I still think Foursquare is the winner right now, but GoWalla sure made a good push this week.
There was no standout, though, South By this year.
It seemed going in like the idea was that sticky bits might be the thing to make some waves because of the QR codes that could be slapped anywhere and you could tag that. But it's too much interaction. You have to walk. You have to see a QR code. You have to walk up. You have to launch your app. You have to scan it.
Too many steps already. I'm tired.
The big fail this year was they just added this QR code to the badges, and if you try to use it, the iPhone app works great. It recognizes the code instantly, right? But then it asks you to sign in, and I can never get it to sign in. The service is way too slow, and it doesn't work.
Plus, walking up to somebody like, oh, hey, do you mind if I scan your badge?
You know what? If it had worked, a lot of us have been comparing. If it had worked and it was easy to get into, we would have done it. But it doesn't work.
You know what you need is more like a LAR, you know, augmented reality browser that you could hold up to somebody's badge and instantly... Yeah. See the information.
Well, tomorrow I'm actually going to be wearing a T-shirt with a code on it that is augmented.
I saw that at you did that for the Gilmore Gang.
Out of my chest, yeah.
Yeah, that's bizarre. Really weird. And there's tattoos that do that too.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to do a commercial. Maybe we could rotate some people out because there's so many people here we'd like to see. Robert Scoble, great to see you. So nice to have you here. And we'll see you for meat a little later on. We'll get you meat drunk. Okay. Okay, Dr. Kiki, too, we're going to send you away.
Can I tell people I have a panel tomorrow.
Yes, what's your panel?
I'm speaking tomorrow here on Open Science. It's a panel with Ariel Waldman, Natalie Villalobos, Jesse Cohen-Sharp from NASA, and Tantek Celik. And we're going to be talking about opening up science, open science, collaborate, cooperate, and communicate. It's going to be a lot of fun. I think we have a lot of good things to say.
Yeah, Tantek's panels are always good, too.
Kiki's also the host of This Week in Science, a great radio show for science lovers, and our own show on the network, the Twit Network, Dr. Kiki's Science Hour, which is every Thursday on the network.
Science Thursdays.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
We have Maxwell's House.
Maxwell's House from 2 to 3, Dr. Kiki's Science Hour from 3 to 4, and coming in April, Roz Rose, which we're going to be taking a scientific ecological slant on this year. From like 4:35, something like that. We're at just Science Thursdays. It's going crazy.
That's a great idea.
Drunk. Science drunk. That's what it's a new.
That's the panel.
New pastime.
The science behind drugs, right? Behind,
there That's probably a lot of fun. Is one actually. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Kiki
for
studied
having me
that. You can go talk to her about that.
Now. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Kiki. Thank you, Robert. We're going to invite some more panelists in here. You're listening to This Week in Tech, a special edition from South by Southwest. We want to thank our friends at Citrix for providing the wherewithal to make this happen and invite you to try their GoToMeeting product. Now, Citrix, of course, is a very well-known name in enterprise for remote access. They practically invented the category. Microsoft licensed their technology for remote desktop, and they've made it easy to use, which is where the GoToMeeting product really just shines. Imagine that instead of traveling across the country to meet with a client or across town to collaborate with a colleague, you could just fire up the GoToMeeting software. It takes about a second to start a meeting. You can either set it up ahead of time or even literally while you're on the phone call with somebody, say, hey, go to GoToMeeting.com. Click the Join a Meeting button. Here's the meeting ID. Now suddenly they're seeing your computer on their desktop. They see your presentation, your spreadsheets. You collaborate on documents together. I've used it to rehearse speeches. It's just really great. I'm sure panelists here at South by Southwest are using GoToMeeting to plan their panels. It's the way you can collaborate with anyone, anywhere, without ever leaving your desktop. Now you can try it free for 30 days. Go to GoToMeeting.com/twit, and an unlimited 30-day trial offer is waiting there for you. GoToMeeting.com/twit. We invite you to try GoToMeeting. We thank Citrix for their help in making Twit possible. Jeff Jarvis has joined us. Hi, Jeff. Good to see you.
Champions.
You and Jake were at the Dignation thing?
Magnificent moment. It was the greatest thing, too, Leo, was that here were two of the kids you really made their careers. And you said it was the first time you were on Dignation.
Yeah.
Right? So that was really kind of a goosebump moment itself. And then for you to find a new youth.
It was fun. I don't take credit for Alex, but I do take a little bit of credit for Kevin Rose. His mom and dad came up to me. It was really neat. And his dad said, I don't remember, something like, you know, your son, my son really got his start with you. And it was really sweet to see that.
His first screensavers, he
was the Dark Tipper then?
Or? He had figured out something.
There was a flaw in Microsoft Windows.
Yeah.
It was a code that allowed you to broadcast a network message.
That's IM? Right.
It was not quite IM.
It was within Windows.
Microsoft Messenger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he
was real nervous, and he had a chalkboard, and it was like, and he was,
Boy, I'd love to find...
That's the monster you created.
I'd love to find that and put that on YouTube.
Oh, what's out there?
There is, I think, Patrick Norton's first appearance on Call for Help, and he's visibly shaking. It's actually really kind of cute. Oh. So, Jeff, you were at Dana Boyd's keynote. And I thought that was, in fact, there's quite a bit of coverage of it today. She talked about privacy and the kind of the disconnect between how maybe you and I view privacy and how the younger generation views privacy. And whether there is privacy, even you can even talk about privacy on the internet.
Well, what she was arguing was that if you look at the continuum from privacy to publicity, that... companies come along and make assumptions, she was arguing, that people want things to be public, which they don't necessarily want to be public. And I agree with Dana heartily about this. The issue is not privacy. The issue is control. I need control of my data and what happens to it, and that's absolutely true. But what she didn't talk about that I always wish people like you and I, Leo, are public to a fault, didn't talk about the benefits of publicness that we learn from young people today. And there's always that edge case. There's this horrible case of a young woman who had an abusive father who started her Facebook page and didn't know when she hit okay that things were public. Okay, that's bad.
But those are
edge cases. And I think that we're letting that rule us in a lowest common denominator. You know, think about this. The thing you asked before the break, that thing that's going to let you picture the badge or the person is, of course, not to plug Twig, but it's Google Goggles.
Right.
And very soon you're going to be able to see this augmented reality where I can see something about all these people out here.
Right.
Right, just directly from my machine.
And so you'll see people's names superimposed, their birth dates,
their embarrassing drunken photo, their embarrassing crowd surfing photo.
Yeah.
Right. And so...
We just saw that software.
That freaks people. Remember? But
what was that?
Oh, we did a story on Buzz Out Loud recently about some software that does that. You point your phone at someone. I mean, it's an opt-in, and they have to be using the software as well.
Goggles turn off face recognition, but somebody else has done it.
Yeah, and
it pops
up all their social information.
So is that an argument saying, oh, my God, you've now made something public? Well, no, it's already on the internet. It brought it to us easier. It's going to freak the public, you know, the privacy advocates, and we end up with this discussion over and over and over again. Dana is brilliant. And she's quite right about control, and she's right to argue that we have to be careful about the implications of what we do, and we have to be very careful about educating people about what they're doing. But having said that, let's have our party.
Right.
Let's have our festival.
Yeah, we were talking about this a little today in relation to Netflix, who's canceled their contest because of the FTC saying, hey, this data can be used to discover things about people that they would rather have private. And so because of concerns about that regulation, they pulled the contest. And this is just movie information, and there are definitely edge cases there, right? But for the most part, people probably wouldn't mind having their movie choices made public in a lot of cases. Yeah.
Well, and we were saying that in a world where Facebook exists, it's totally bizarre that Netflix would get sued for maybe revealing how many times you rented like some really crappy movie. Like, it just doesn't seem like, you know, relative to the information that you may not know you're revealing. Because what this comes down to, the control thing, it comes down to opt-in. Well, if I am opted into revealing more information than I want to, that's not acceptable.
Or if Netflix knew what they knew today about the power and value of that data analyzed by outsiders, they would have changed their terms of use long, long, long ago to say, you're opted in, and here's a method where you can opt out. Otherwise, this data in aggregate is ours. Mm-hmm. But they didn't do that, probably, and so that's where they're stuck now. And we're going to see the TOS be the battlefield.
But isn't the problem with opting people in? I mean, that's what Facebook does. It gets them in trouble all the time. And it should be opt-in. You should have
Facebook is a social thing. And if the default becomes people want to befriend me, and they tell, but I can't see anything about them. That's not very friendly. I'm not doing it. Sorry, no.
Misanthropes want to use Facebook too.
Yes. Maybe, well, maybe I know I have one.
Maybe you could have a trial period. Maybe there could be like a preview, right? Like instead of Facebook opting you into showing everyone everything, like when they roll out those new privacy features and they roll and if you haven't changed your default privacy and they opted you into showing all of your photos, all of your wall posts, all of your information to everyone on the internet. Like, there was a middle step. There could be a preview so that if somebody tries to friend you, there's a preview of their basic information, maybe who they work for and what they, you know, because I do often want to know that. But I think that there was a way to solve that technologically without opting in all of the Facebook users to really a remarkable overshare.
Boyd also, though, pointed out that there's a generational gap in this, that mm-hmm. Jeff and I, our generation is everything's private unless we opt into publicity. And younger people, she said, and she's done a lot of studies of this, think everything's public, but they want to be able to say what's private. Is that right?
Right. It's the default is different.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's also true culture to culture. I go to Germany a lot, and they're crazy about privacy, but then I go to a sauna in Germany, and it's co-ed and naked.
And that's opt-in, but that's why.
And they care about the privacy of everything except their private parts.
Right.
You know, so the privacy of their private parts doesn't matter.
Right.
Now, to us, that seems kind of loony, but everybody's different in that way, and it's hard to come up with structures here. But I think that the risk we have here is that we're going to have this magnificent new social connected world, and we're going to let these edge cases make us shut down into our cocoons again. That'd be a tragedy, I think.
I think there will be a middle ground. One of the things we're talking about at lunch today, actually, is you know, this idea that South by Southwest knows where you are. So we're talking about Foursquare and Gowalla, and that a lot of us, that there, you know, there were three women at the table, and we were all saying, like, yeah, I'm totally not comfortable with it. Like, I don't want to use Foursquare because I'm afraid I'm going to turn on a bunch of stuff that I don't know how to turn off. And, you know, like, my stance on it is I'm not giving anyone my coordinates unless I need a helicopter to come and rescue me. Like, it's just, and I think that there is not.
Foursquare? No,
I don't use it.
Huh.
And I think that it's partly, we talked about the possibility that to a certain extent there's a gender element too. There may be an age element, and then there's also a gender element. Like,
Gina
I am way less comfortable.
Feels that way. Yeah, she does not want to publicize where she is.
No.
How about you, Sarah? Do you feel like that's scary?
Well, I'm just really careful about who, you know, because it's a two-way street on Gowalla and Foursquare. You know, people aren't following you like they are on Twitter. You have to be friends jointly. Yeah. You and I both have to decide, yes, we both want to maybe come to each other's restaurant.
See, right. I never even bothered finding that out. I just thought, well, I'll just say where I am.
Or that. Or text.
Yeah, I'll just text you.
Yeah.
So you have to be mutually following to see, for them to see who
I am. Yeah, so I have to, you know, I'm just really careful about who I what I tell myself is whoever I say is my friend on Foursquare is somebody that I would like to show up at the bar that I check into.
Right.
Good rule.
You know?
Because they may.
Because I'm offering. That's what I'm kind of offering.
And I think that's really what the debate is about, which is levels of control. It's not about private versus public. It's about how much do you want to make public and to whom?
Right.
Because there are certain people that I do want to make it public to, and that's what Foursquare is about,
right? Do you know you're doing it when you do it?
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
That's really the big issue.
Yeah, is something being turned on that you didn't know was turned on?
Right. Now, in defense of Facebook and that switch, and I don't know the details very much, and my son was talking about it, Jake was last night, but they were actually giving you more controls when they did that. This whole argument that they made, everything public to everyone, isn't quite the case.
No, it is true. They gave you more controls, but they made everything more granular, and if you had not made any changes to your default privacy settings, all of those granular privacy settings defaulted to everyone. So things that were previously available only to your friends, because that was the default setting, suddenly became available to everyone. And then a lot of people, I mean, believe me, I have found out a lot of things from people's photos because they don't know that, like, you've got to change the settings not just for the photos that you upload, but also your mobile uploads. Like, those might still be available to everyone.
That's a separate setting.
Like, it's a separate setting. So the settings are actually so granular now that there's a lot of stuff that you might not even realize is still available to everyone.
It's interesting because Mark Zuckerberg himself got bit by this. When that change happened, all of his photos suddenly became public. He said, oh, that's no problem, except I noticed he pulled quite a few of them back after that.
He did. Yeah, he totally
no
did.
No problem.
He didn't want to end up like the LifeLock guy.
Yeah. Did he get hacked, the LifeLock guy?
Oh, several times.
Yeah. Yeah. This is my social.
Like, looking at strangers' photos on Facebook is a good way to spend a Friday night.
That's so sad.
And it's wrong.
See, if you guys use Foursquare, you wouldn't have to be alone on
Leo,
Friday
what's
night.
Too far for you?
That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, I allowed people to fondle my body parts last night at Dig Nation. I don't know. You're probably asking the wrong person. Exactly. We're having fun. This is our TWIT special from South by Southwest, which has been a really amazing event so far. Jeff Jarvis is here. He's one of the hosts of our show This Week in Google, which is heard Saturday afternoons on the TWIT network. And, you, of course, can subscribe to that in iTunes. We actually have a theory that people, because it's a Saturday show, maybe as many people, it's actually a very well-listened to show, but maybe not as many people are listening to it as subscribing to it because it comes out Saturday. So we're thinking maybe
people have lives.
They have lives. Maybe we should just push it out Monday instead. Anyway, we're going to take a look at that. I'd love to hear what you think about that. Also with us, Sarah Lane, the great Sarah Lane, who is, of course, a former host of This Week in Fun, but a longtime Tech TV producer and host on G4 Tech TV as well. Molly Wood from Buzz Out Loud, Tom Merritt from Buzz Out Loud also, and Molly's new rant column, which is cnet.com/Molly-rants. Yes. I memorized that.
I know. Well,
that's what I do on a Friday night.
That's an annoying URL, so thank you for that.
Have you ranted about the URL yet?
No.
That might be a good rant.
I'm doing ACTA next, and then I'll get to the URL.
ACTA. Oh, don't get me started. One of the other things Dana Boyd said in her speech was that even though Buzz did nothing technologically wrong in their launch, she said, from a technological point of view, it was an opt-in thing. They kind of explained what they were doing. She said, and yet it was, quote, a complete disaster.
Her point was brilliantly simple, which was they mixed the private and the public. Mm-hmm. Your expectation on email is that it is private, and suddenly, not understanding this new paradigm that Google lived under, zap, there you are. Mm-hmm. And within Google, it was badly tested because within Google, public and private are intermingled with your company. And so it just didn't work for the rest of us at all. I think she was very right about that. I think that's for a lot of reasons, mixing it with Gmail just messed it up.
Why did they not beta Google Buzz when they betaed everything else in some cases for years?
Exactly.
And they just threw this one right out.
They betaed it inside of Google, which was a huge mistake, obviously, because Google engineers have different needs than we do.
But it's more than just the beta process. It's also the expectation that we have out here that says, oh, okay, they know it's not done yet. All right, I can yell about this. And that's the problem by not going beta. I think it was quite foolish of them not to.
Yeah. We're going to take a little bit of a break and come back with more. We'll swap some people in. Jeff, it's been great seeing you.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. We really appreciate it. Come
always
to our meat dinner. We're going to do, you and Jake, please come to
have
snarf with us after the show. We're going to have a little party. In fact, you know, I might turn the live streaming rig on for that.
You should.
Yeah, I should.
Meat cam.
I want to surf meat.
Meat cam.
Meat cam.
Oh, wow.
Drunk on meat.
That's like Austin in a nutshell. As far as, like, that's been my experience
so far. It's meat and booze.
Oh, Lord.
Meat gone wild.
It's a meetup.
It's a meetup, says Robert. Hey, Robert.
Get
Robert back, because sit down for a second, because after I do the commercial, I want to ask you about the Chevy Volt, because you drove the new electric car from Chevy. Can you talk about that?
Yeah.
All right, come around. I'm just going to do a commercial for Audible, and when we come back, Robert will join us. Also, Mark Millian is here from the Los Angeles Times, and Schwood, and he perpetrated a grand hoax last night, which apparently was a grand success. We'll find out about that in just a little bit. Before we do, though, I want to mention our friends at Audible.com, a great place to get your audiobooks. In fact, I don't even know why they need to advertise. I think it's the only place to get your audiobooks anymore, at least online. But what a great... Don't say that. No, they need to advertise. They need to advertise more. What a great place to go. Audible saved my life when I had that long commute to Tech TV. And now I listen to Audible books whenever I'm in the car, at the gym, whenever I'm cooking dinner, anytime that I need to or would like to read. I was just talking to Francine Hardaway yesterday, who's also an Audible fan, and she said, I had kind of stopped reading because my life was too busy, and Audible helped me rediscover books. I think that's one of the things Audible does really, really well. It gets you turned on to reading. Now, I know that, Tom, you do a podcast with Veronica called Sword and Laser, and I know you also, whenever you do a book, it's a book, you know, sci-fi book podcast. You do try to look for those books on Audible before you say buy the paper version. Do you prefer paper or plastic?
I actually, the thing that I prefer the most is electronic with text to speech.
You listen to the Kindle. What is wrong with you?
You can't get it. You can't do it
anymore. They turned it off.
Yeah. So you know, the thing I like about audiobooks is that you know how much time you need to set aside to get the book done, because right. not that it's a burden, but when you're doing a book club, exactly you need to get it done at a certain time. So it's really good for scheduling. We're doing The Wind Up Girl right now by Paolo Bacigalupi, which is available on Audible.
And tell me about it. What is it?
It's set in a not too distant future where the main character is a calorie man because it's getting harder and harder to grow food.
Wow.
And so there's a lot of genetic manipulation and copyright battles over the genes that make food. And so, you know, I don't want to give too much away before
great.
We get into it. But yeah, it's a great read.
Well, I'm listening to Demon right now because on your recommendation, and I really am loving it.
Are you?
It's even better than I thought. I really am digging it.
It's really good. A lot of that stuff we were talking about, augmented reality, shows up in that.
Yeah. Daniel Suarez really obviously is a geek. In fact, I'm surprised he's not here because he obviously is into this stuff. All right. Well, let's make The Wind-Up Girl our pick of the week from Paolo Bacigalupi. It is it's 19 hours and 34 minutes. So you're going to get value for dollar there. It's a long book. And you can get it for free by going to audible.com/twit2. Actually, you can get two books, so why don't you get that and Demon? And one of the great things about listening to these books is now you can participate with Sword and Laser, and you can join their conversation at, is it theswordandlaser.com? Is that?
Yeah.
Yeah, theswordandlaser.
Well, actually, no, the Sword and Laser is our email address. Swordandlaser.com is the URL.
Swordandlaser.com.
Right.
And don't go to swordandlaserpointer.com. That's a whole different thing.
Don't. Well, I mean, unless you need laser pointer.
The Wind-Up Girl, Paolo Bacigalupi. Make that your pick. You can get it for free by going to audible.com/twit2. Actually, when you go there, you're going to sign up for the Platinum account, which I recommend. Francine, I was talking to her. She said, I signed up for the Gold account, and I wish I'd signed up for the Platinum account because I keep buying more books. Get two books a month. Really, you'll be listening to them, I promise you. audible.com/twit2. We thank them so much for their support of This Week in Tech. I'm gonna add that to my my cart right now. That's great. So, hello there to Mark Millian from the Los Angeles Times. Great
hello.
To see you, Mark. Thanks for joining us. Also to Mr. Brian Brushwood.
Howdy, howdy, howdy.
Of the Scam School Show on Revision 3 and our own NSFW on the Twit Network.
NSFW was like NSFW Live last night.
It was awesome last night. Look, what is that? You have an NSFW sticker or pass? What is that, Robert?
Stickers.
Get that microphone in front of your face because I wanted to ask you about the Volt. You and I drove the Volt today, the Chevy Volt, the new electric car. Did you guys drive the Volt yet? Anybody?
How the hell did they get us up at 7?
That's kind of mean, Leo.
Any of you ever drive the Volt? No.
How the heck did they get us up at 7:30 in the morning to do that? I don't know.
I was there at 10. But. So it's an electric car, which Chevy's going to be delivering. It's the first electric car since the EV1, so it's been quite a long time since Detroit's made an electric car. I mean, Tesla's an electric car, but this is a Detroit electric car, mass market.
Well, it's not just electric. It's electric that drives for 40 miles on electricity, but once you go over 40, it switches to gas, where the gas engine charges the battery.
It's not a hybrid. The gas doesn't power the car. It charges the battery so you can keep going.
Yep.
So it's kind of an unlimited or a much longer distance. They didn't give us a total distance. Or maybe they did a few hundred miles.
No, they said you could drive it forever.
As long as you just fill the gas tank.
Yep.
Yeah.
See, that's actually my biggest fear with the electrics is getting halfway out and then having to wait. Because it takes a long time for it to charge. Do they say how long it takes?
If you have a 120 volt AC, it takes about 8 or 9 hours.
Yeah.
If you have 240, which many people do because of their electric dryers and so forth, it takes about 3 hours. And it has some smart technology. It had it, for one thing, it had it as an iPhone and a Droid app. Which I think is very,
you can
very
drive
cool.
the car with it. You just sort
no.
of
no,
you can
you
turn
it
off. Left and right.
Accelerometer.
That's right. Yeah.
It's like that Hummer in Demon. That
you can turn.
Yeah.
You can turn the car on. You can get it ready for you because if you're in cold climate,
oh,
you can get the car warm for you.
Or here in Texas, turn on the AC.
Turn on the AC.
Yeah, it's hot.
Now, I think that's going to be a very big thing that people are not thinking about is, you know, it's nothing to heat in a gas vehicle because the engine's generating a ton of heat. When you're heating an electric vehicle, it's taking it right out of the battery. And
They
even made kind of a point about climate control is kind of an issue on a battery-driven car. I don't know what it is on the Tesla, but I'm sure the Teslas do better in California where you don't have those extremes of heat and cold.
Yeah.
One of the things they said is we turn the seat heaters on because it turns out that it's much more efficient to heat the seat than to heat the car.
Yeah.
So they prefer heating the seat.
They have like gloves built into the
that's
warm
what
your fingers.
Need. Yeah. I think it's great that they're doing it, and it was fun to drive. It was a nice car.
It was great.
Lots of torque.
I got told to slow down in it. So
did you?
Oh yeah, I was squealing the tires around the S turns, and they said, "Hey!" They came out and yelled at me. Actually,
really?
Oh, yeah.
Were you alone?
No, there was somebody in the car with me.
You?
She didn't care.
She didn't mind, but the other guy.
And I assumed it was like car and driver test track. You know,
that's awesome.
We were at a deserted shopping mall. That was a little weird because we got in the cab to the shopping mall. The driver said, "Well, it's closed." What's that? Shopping malls close on Sunday in Texas?
Yeah. It'd be the first I've heard of anything.
That's bizarre. Anyway, happening. It was a closed down shopping mall, and we were in the parking lot there. They coned it off. That was kind of fun because we could really step on it.
Yeah.
And it has some good pickup. They have a sport mode that gives you better torque. It was a little hesitant. Now, you drive a Prius.
I have a brand new Prius, a 2010 Prius. It's better on pickup than the Prius.
Is it?
It's also a little bit quieter because it's only electric for most of the time. I never heard the gas engine kick in.
It's
amazing. Because, yeah, it's all electric.
Does it have a little noise maker on the front so you don't run into people?
They have a pedestrian mode, so it's not quite a horn, but it's a little
beep, 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 no kidding.
Yeah,
because if you hit the horn, people go, "Whoa,
dude!" I've wanted that for years, like a polite version of the horn.
That's what it is. Yeah. It's a polite horn,
and you need a third one to play La Cucaracha.
You can mod it to do that.
Okay,
the hackers. When do you need that?
You know, wait a minute. How about like ringtone horns that you just load up?
Horn tones.
There you go.
Quick, I'm registering it.
Horn tones.
Horntones.com. No.
That was at CES like 2004 or something. I remember that. Yeah.
You know, it's funny because the software is only 65% finished for the car.
Oh, that's what I want to do is drive a car in beta.
Well, that's why they had us do it at the shopping mall. It's not street legal yet. Wow. It hasn't been approved to be driven by a non-employee on the street yet. And that's why we had to drive it off in the parking lot. Mm-hmm. But, the hacker, these things are all computer program now.
Wow. I can't believe somebody has already got horntones.com, horntones.net, and horntones.org.
Yeah. Definitely pornography.
It's a thing.
That's horny tones.
That's right. You drive a Prius. Are you worried about sudden acceleration?
No. You know, I was talking to Guy Kawasaki about this morning, and, let's be real. There's been, 50 deaths in 10 years that could be attributed, and it's not to... not to the Prius, but
there is a horntones.com.
There is a horntones.
It says the one and only MP3-enabled vehicle horn.
But yes!
That is awesome.
All right. So there's been 50 deaths, supposedly, that could have been caused by some sudden acceleration problems on Toyotas.
That's over, a lot. 50 is a lot.
Over the last 10 years.
Oh, okay. Only 5 a year. Well, okay. Then I feel better.
There's 40,000 people a year who die in cars in the United States. This is a statistical anomaly.
You think this is this year's Summer of the Shark, where it's just like they're on the prowl, Toyotas.
I think we as humans don't have a good way to measure risk to us.
Yes,
we get scared of flying in a plane, which is thousands of times more safe than driving a Toyota to the airport.
Right.
And we don't have a good way of humans don't measure risk very
well. That is partly Toyota's fault, actually, in this case.
Absolutely.
Because if they had handled it better, it could have just been like a service.
It really did.
They sounded like they just totally rolled over. They just biffed it. And they ignored it. And they tried to sweep it under the rug. Yeah. And then they ended up having to do a full-scale recall, which is a total overreaction. And now they're having to do all kinds of recalls on just stupid stuff. But it's their own marketing fault.
I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a PR problem.
I'm not saying you're totally not going to die in your Prius, but they also totally
well, you know, I actually
you
love
might for other reasons.
I actually love having a Prius now because people get out of my way.
He could accelerate at any moment. I mean, if you look at this Volt, I guess fly-by-wire cars are the future. I presume this is all software. This car, I mean,
and that's really the hard thing is. How do you know that there's a bug or not?
Right.
Steve Wozniak and I have been talking about this because we both have the same car, and he thinks that he has a bug in his car with the cruise control, which you have to turn on, by the way, and it's always overridable. And he told me how to reproduce his problem. I've tried it more than 500 times. I can't reproduce it. Using his own technique to reproduce the bug.
But it's reproducible.
Can you reproduce it in his car with you driving? Have
he
you tried
that?
Oh, really?
And he won't let Toyota look at his car. And no journalist has ever filmed him doing it. And he, the way you talk with him, because he says it happens at 61, 71, or 81 miles an hour, I know how the switch increments. It increments, if you tap it up, it increments 1 mile per hour. If you hold it, it increments 5 miles an hour. And he also, when you interview him, he says he doesn't look at the right number on the right side, which is the top speed that the cruise will ever go. He says, I can't see that number, and I don't care about it. I don't.
Are you accusing this of being a user error type thing?
I think there's
Dude,
some.
We all know it's a user error. Yeah. Come on.
Seriously, what does he know about technology? Come on.
I'm not sure because maybe his switch is sticky. Maybe his switch has a bug. Maybe there is a bug. But I haven't been able to reproduce it, and I have tried more than 500 times. I've put 13,000 miles on my car already since July. I drive a lot, and I drive a lot on freeway, and I use the cruise control 80% of the time. I've never had a problem with it. And
you're saying it's PebPass.
PebScab.
PebScab.
Problem exists between steering column and bucket seat.
Yours is better than mine. I'll let you go with mine. But we were both along the same lines
well
here.
Well done, Merritt. Well done.
And I don't really blame Woz. I don't know if Woz is having the problem and he's punking the media or whatnot. I don't know. I assume he's having the problem. But
probably,
I blame.
Why won't he let anybody else?
But I blame the media for not renting the car and trying it out. Yeah. I blame the media for not forcing their way into his car and filming him have this problem. Mm-hmm. And I blame the media for not understanding the technology that's going on. And it's not just the media. The National Highway Transportation Safety Administration doesn't have a single software engineer on their staff. So how are they able to understand the kinds of complex issues that these cars are going to have? My car has radar that follows automatically the car in front of it. Mm-hmm. This is all computer controlled, and it's the first step along the road to getting a fully automatic car that you just punch in an address and it goes there.
Totally.
I wonder if it's the kind of thing, since there is so much software, I wonder if it's the kind of thing you could go in and just get a flash upgrade to start adding increments that bring us closer to
Let's
that
point. Let's not put flash on cars. That's it.
Well, actually,
I mean, we're close to having user-upgradable cars. There's no reason that we shouldn't have that very soon.
The Prius we have does have a problem with braking. If you have an emergency stop, the brakes feel weird. And people say they've had problems with that. They've actually just upgraded the software so that the brakes work differently to make...
But you still have to bring it into the dealer, right? How long until you just, you know, hook it up to your Wi-Fi and it's fixed?
Well, it's the standard plug that gets you into the computer. People are hacking Priuses all over the place.
I have my Ford Sync via USB, so I mean, you could do it. That's just, I think there's some real nervousness about liability. And talk about PebCAC.
Yeah.
Well, I put the wrong BIOS in my car, and now it drives backwards. It's not a good idea.
Ford very cleverly in the last couple weeks came out with a big press release announcing that they're basically doing both hardware and software firewalling
That's
in their vehicles
smart.
So that any kind of corruption that happens to the computer systems that operate the car cannot reach the mechanical portions of the car. And it was very good timing on their part, like extremely savvy media to say, you know, in the wake of all this Toyota stuff, we're totally locking down our systems. But it's also really something that kind of needs to happen.
I think it's their corporate bias. I asked Alan Mulally if Ford's ever going to make an autonomous vehicle. He said unequivocally, absolutely not.
Now, why is that?
I bet they are going to.
You can't, never is a long time. Okay.
Yeah.
I could say never in 10 years, because that's pretty clear. Mm-hmm. But 100 years from now, give me
not
a break.
Not even the Volvo V70 is like two iterations away from being a self-driving vehicle. I mean,
is
that
it really?
Thing is so there is so much driver control.
Which is developed
in those cars.
By Ford, by the way.
Which was exactly.
It's a Ford.
There was a Mercedes actually that was demoed in Geneva. That's the closest thing I've seen yet to auto driving. I mean, it was just the driver controls in that system.
The Bliss,
are remarkable.
The Bliss system. Does your car have Bliss? Because the Bliss system, that's from Volvo Ford.
No,
it's the system that lets you park the car automatically.
I have that,
and it auto detects people on your side and will not
I don't
swerve
have
into the lane when there's somebody there.
I have there's a camera in the Prius that looks at lane markers, and if you start going into the lane, it beeps at you and nudges you back.
The seatbelts too, which I thought was a little creepy.
That's if you're about to hit somebody, which has happened twice in my car. If you're about to hit somebody, the radar system says, "Oh shit, my car's going to get wrecked," and it pre-fires the brakes, it grabs you on the seatbelt. You feel the seatbelt go boom,
and
that wakes you up and makes you look ahead too. And when you touch the brakes, it really is hypersensitive. This is one thing that was a major disappointment with the Chevy Volt, Leo, was that they didn't put these radar systems into that car. And if you interview the guys at Ford who built the Taurus 2010 Taurus, it has all these systems that use radar to warn you that you're about to hit something, or it helps you back out of a stall. It has radar facing sideways. So if you're backing out of a parking garage and you can't see around a big van or something, as you back up, the car has some radar sensors in the back that sense if a car is coming toward you and beeps at you and says stop. Mm-hmm. It is really, really magical stuff that is really safe. It helps, you know, avoid accidents.
That's going to be how it happens, where eventually we choose to give up control, and it's always going to be optional, but like, yeah, we got used to cruise control, we're getting used to radar assist, we're getting used to, you know, seat belts that hold you down, and it's just going to be one thing after another until pretty much it's like, just flip the switch.
Just hold me down.
Take me home.
I don't even know if it'll be a flip switch. I think we'll just suddenly look around one day and realize, you know, we're not doing much in this car anymore.
Right.
You know, they just add options and options.
Hey, you know what hasn't happened lately? People dying. You know, kidding. It's like, to me, it can't happen fast enough. It's like, we're not good drivers.
But if your car actually prevents people from tailgating, then they won't run into the back of you if a dog runs in front of the car. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, yeah, well, it's boiling a frog.
Stories like Toyota set that back in the public mindset, though. They kind of don't want to put that control back into the hands of a machine. When people are already unsafe, like we were talking about earlier, unsafe with handing over their life to a faceless but professional pilot of an airplane, they're not going to want to give it to an automobile.
It's actually
a robot.
The same battle goes on in the cockpits of airplanes. There's a real distinction between how the Airbus and the Boeing allow you to fly a plane. The Airbus will not let a pilot make a mistake.
Yeah.
But the pilots who fly for United said, we are not going to allow Boeing to do this because we want the ultimate control. So on a Boeing, you can put it into a fatal stall.
Wow.
Because the software it will not override the pilot.
I would love to be a fly on the wall at that meeting. It's like, explain to us why you need the ability to put your plane
into a fatal
stall.
What is that scenario in Star Trek? It's the
Kobayashi Maru. Yeah.
Maru scenario. You never know when you're going to need to take control.
So they need to go in and reprogram the plane?
Yes. Exactly.
It's interesting. Also, playing with the radar, right now there are blind spots in the radar. If somebody cuts me off about a foot in front of my car, the radar can't see it, and it actually can let you accelerate right into the car.
Fix, though, I mean, that's,
well, it just needs more sensors, which cost. These sensors are phased array sensors, which are probably a few $100, and they're pricey. And the more of them you put in the car, the more software you have to write, and the more testing you have to do for the lawyers, and et cetera, et cetera. But there are some blind spots, and so it doesn't work everywhere, you know, and it can't prevent all accidents yet, you know, so.
Robert, thank you for coming back. I appreciate it. I did want to talk a little bit about that, and I forgot to ask.
Both of all the companies that are playing with this stuff is really cool. By the way, I love the display. Did you love the display?
Beautiful display. Yeah.
It's like an iPad display in your dashboard, and it has really beautiful color and a lot of information about what's going on.
I think you're going to see that in all cars now. I mean, that's really where cars are going. And it's Ford's already announced basically they're going to have an app store. Yeah. You know, everybody sees these apps taking off on cell phones. They're going to put apps everywhere, including your car.
One thing I was talking with the software guys there was, I can't wait for the day when they start using the Foursquare data that we're putting in. You know, you're driving down the street, and your friends all love this restaurant that we're going to for dinner tonight. Why doesn't it warn you and say, hey, there's a great, you know, restaurant down here, or something that we all have decided that's important for our friends to know about this place? Or Waze. Have you played with Waze? It's an iPhone app, Waze. It's a crowdsourced traffic app. So if I see an accident happen right in front of me, I can report it on my iPhone or on my Android phone. Well, that could warn everybody else, don't go down the street, because it's
I installed
be
that, but there's none of that. You need the network effect to make that work. Absolutely. Right? Everybody has to use it. So
you're all alone in Petaluma. There's no accidents.
It's okay here. Anybody wants to know? Thank you, Robert.
Are you all texting that while you're driving?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good.
Become the next entry.
Just saying.
I think that Foursquare thing that Robert was just talking about actually isn't that far out. I was just at a panel that Dennis Crowley, the founder of Foursquare, was giving, and he was talking about how their next step, in addition to making some actual money, is to take that all of this data they're getting from their users and giving it back in a meaningful way, like what your friends are recommending, and kind of like making that more Yelp-like.
It's
more
funny.
Visible.
I mean, that's exactly what Twitter says, and all of these social media companies say. We're aggregating data. We know it's got some value, and someday we'll figure out what the hell we could do with it to make money on it.
We'd have more of that data mining available by now. I mean, now it's like it's even harder to go back and find tweets from a year ago, and the real-time search doesn't go nearly as far back as it used to, back when Surmise was doing it.
You got to pay.
Yeah, maybe that's part of it, but also I wonder if this privacy thing we talked about at the beginning of the show also might be some of it. People are also a little bit worried about, privacy implications. Who owns this? Do you own your tweets? Who owns these tweets? I think Twitter has come out fair and square that we own the tweets, right?
Yeah.
So now what do they do? That kind of blew that a little bit. We're going to take a break, come back with more. Mark Millian is here from the Los Angeles Times. Brian Brushwood of Scam School. Great to see you, Brian. And, of course, Tom and Molly from Buzz Out Loud. You're watching a special edition of Twit from South by Southwest. In fact, in just a little bit, we're going to do East Meets West, aren't we?
Yeah.
Like in an hour. Mm-hmm. So we better hurry up here. Is Roger's not in Austin?
No, Roger will be on Skype.
Okay.
From the Casa de Chang.
Casa de Chang. And then we eat meat. This portion of the show brought to you by our friends at Squarespace.com. I know they did your Sword and Laser website. Is that right?
Yeah, they do that. I use them for forecast
as well.
I bought the.
Why did you choose? Why did you choose Foursquare?
You know, I tried it for forecast because I was launching a new thing and I want to try them out.
Yeah,
and so I gave it a whirl. They also sponsored the Buzz Out Loud meetup.
Oh, that's nice.
This week too, so we got to thank them again for that because they provided a great space.
That's great. I think Squarespace is fantastic. In fact, we've been out to their offices in New York. Young guys who originally created it for themselves when they were in college. It's both software and hosting. I think that's one of the things I'd like to make clear. It's not a blogging platform. It's a website hosting package that includes some amazing software templates that just to die for, the ability to customize as much as you want or are capable of. I mean, if you're a CSS or JavaScript guru, go right at it. If you just want to be able to drag and drop the width of your site's columns, you can do that too. Or you can just stick with the existing templates. They're really beautiful.
You know, it's funny you mentioned the CSS stuff allows somebody like me who knows just enough to insist to want to manage my site myself, but to hire somebody to put together a killer-looking site using all the custom CSS.
Exactly.
So like the Scam School site or my Schwood.com, actually, I love the layout. And I never could have put that together. I don't know.
Are you on Squarespace
CSS.
Too?
Oh, yeah. Schwood.com's on Squarespace. And then, but now every time I have a new item to add, it's super easy. I drop it in. I link stuff in. And whenever, you know, from time to time, I'll come up with idiotic publicity stunts. And then when the traffic hits, you know, it's all scalable. I don't have to worry about
the
dig effect.
That's another great feature. We don't talk enough about that. They use a virtual private server technology based on Java that means that when there is bandwidth needs, they can. It's very instant, and you never really run out of bandwidth on this thing. And it starts at $8 a month, but I'm going to let you try it for free. If you go to squarespace.com/twit, you can try it free for 2 weeks. Import all your data from your Blogger, your movable type, your TypePad, or your WordPress blog. It just imports the data. It will export it back out, so you're not trapped there. But you can try it absolutely free for 2 weeks. Take a look at the statistics package, the incredible iPhone app that makes it so easy to post. I could go on and on.
And the free is for real is free. They don't ask you for a credit card or anything.
Card,
you just
nothing.
Give them an email, and then, you know, after 2 weeks. I mean, that's when you know that they know they've got something good, where it's like there are no hooks at all.
Right.
It's like, no, seriously, just try a little
just
bit
try
of it.
It.
It's totally
the first,
free.
Little pinch.
First one's free.
Yeah. Squarespace.com/twit. We will give you 10% off if you use the Twit coupon code when you sign up, but it starts at $8, so 10% off is like 80 cents a month. I don't think it's really...
And that's for the lifetime.
That's for the lifetime.
Forever.
Forever 10% off?
Yeah.
You know this ad copy better than I do.
I know a thing or two about Squarespace.
I didn't know that. Really?
Slip his code in. No. I'm doing my best to not.
That's very good. What is your code?
Scam School.
All right.
All
you
one
can
word.
Use, you can use that if you want. If you choose who you like better. Squarespace. we don't really care. As long,
hey, you guys should have a meet off later.
Kidding. We will. Okay.
And then whoever eats the most. Well, okay. You know what? This just is get all wrong. I'm not going to talk out loud anymore. It's not all good in my head.
Very fast. And this is why we don't have autonomous vehicles. Right, Squarespace.com/twit. Give it a try. I think you'll like it. Did you? Now, we're all here. We're not reading the New York Times or anything, but front page of the business section of the New York Times, Apple's spat with Google is getting personal. They're talking about how Eric Schmidt, who was once friends with Steve Jobs, is now, you know, I mean, these guys are going at each other's throats with its lawsuit against HTC, which was, you know, kind of a proxy for Google in this case. Google doing things like putting multi-touch in the Droid the Nexus One, I should say, after saying they wouldn't do it. It's quite a battle. The Times interviewed 24 industry watchers, Silicon Valley investors, and current and former employees at both Apple and Google, most of whom requested anonymity. They say this offers an unusually vivid display of enmity and ambition between Jobs and Schmidt.
Which is so weird, because when the iPhone launched, I mean, it was covered in Google. It had dripping with Google all over it.
And that's now, exactly right.
Yeah, Schmidt was up on stage.
He was on stage.
Yeah.
What happened? What went wrong?
Jobs kind of almost seems like he feels betrayed by Android. It seems like you look at that HTC suit, and the vast majority of these patents that they're calling out are software patents. Right. They're Google Android patents. There's multi-touch.
Nothing
and
to do
things.
With hardware. Nothing to do with hardware.
Really is very much divorced from HTC in the most part.
But why didn't they go after Google? Why didn't they sue Google?
Would you sue Google? Seriously, though, like, would you start with Google? You'd totally start with HTC, and then you get some precedent established, and you move on down the line.
And it's a soft underbelly because you can keep the handsets off the market. And you don't really have to worry about Android so much.
It's really personal, and you have to wonder about how much of it might be like how long Schmidt sat on that board, just kind of harvesting ideas and then going off and
putting out phones that really look bad.
The same. It's got to chop him.
Yeah. Yeah, Travis says, we didn't enter the search business. They entered the phone business. Make no mistake, Google wants to kill the iPhone. We won't let them.
I mean, patents are very much a wall that companies put up. When you look at the Nokia suit, Nokia came after Apple, and then Apple countersued because they have their own patents that Nokia is stepping on. So, I mean, maybe Apple's patent lawyers looked and said, well, I don't think HTC really has anything on us, so let's go for them. I'm sure that Google has some patents that they could easily have thrown back in Apple's face.
Yeah, well, that's usually what you do in a lawsuit like this, right? You say these suits go away because you say, well, if you're going to sue us, well, we have some patents we could sue you with.
So. I'm curious what would have happened if Schmidt hadn't been forced to leave Apple.
The board.
Yeah, the Apple board. Because it seems like he left, then all this Android stuff started to become a problem. As if Jobs thinks, or maybe other people at Apple think, he took a bunch of stuff he knew that he shouldn't have known with him, and we don't like it.
Right.
Would they still be going after all of this stuff? Because honestly, I don't believe he did. I believe all that stuff was probably already in development. It's pretty common stuff, and you want to make it look like that. So could it just be sour grapes?
They quote one anonymous Silicon Valley venture capitalist who says, it's World War III. Amazing animosity is motivating two of the most powerful people in the industry. This is emotional. This is the biggest ego battle in history. It's incendiary.
Sunday. Jinx.
I think it must have been Callahan who said that. Don't you think? That sounds Jason right there.
Anonymously.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds very personal. And I think that what you said about the patent war, Mark, is another part of the reason that they didn't name Google in the lawsuit at first. Like, they can name HTC now, and then they don't have to do the patent trading with Google, and Google can't do much. Right now, they're sitting on the sidelines with a bunch of patents going like, we have geolocation, you bastards. You know.
They still issued their statement. They jumped in there like, we're behind HTC.
And Schmidt said, I think Jobs is the best CEO in history. But according to, again, these interviews, you've been behind, I'm sure, somewhat involved, Mark, at the Times in these kinds of stories. They get a lot of deep background stuff. Nobody wants to go on record, but they've got quote after quote after quote. Right. There's obviously a lot of people who think something's going on.
Yeah, I'm sure.
They can't name names, though. According to some of these interviews, many of the meetings between Apple and Google started turning confrontational very early on.
I love that language, because I just picture two guys in suits. They're like pulling up. They're like, no, I'm going to get it.
According to people familiar with the discussions, Mr. Jobs often accused Google of stealing iPhone features. Google executives said that Android's features were based on longstanding ideas already circulating in the industry, and some Android prototypes predated the iPhone. At one particularly heated meeting, I'm reading from the New York Times here, in 2008, 2 years ago, on Google's campus, Mr. Jobs angrily told Google executives that if they deployed a version of multi-touch, he would sue. Two people briefed in the meeting described it as fierce.
Now, what exactly is their ownership of multi-touch? Because the technology has been around 20 years.
It's a sucky, weak patent, I think.
It's an interface patent, largely, right? They don't necessarily... They don't have a lot of technology patents, as I understand it, on multi-touch, but they have a lot of the actual idea patents, the ones that are so fuzzy and annoying, right? Like how you do it. Not the technology behind the fact that you can swipe to unlock, but the actual gesture of swiping to unlock. It's like they patented a version of like click and drag.
Right, and another one of those patents is if you click to delete an item, then the screen rearranges itself so that there's not
that's
like
a patent?
Gaping hole. That's a patent.
We're going to leave a hole. Well,
there's no question, though. It seems like there's no question that Apple is furious that Google came out with something that looks a lot like the iPhone.
Yeah.
I mean, and they did.
And Google has scooped them in some cases. The AdMob acquisition is one thing. Apple reportedly was offering $600 million for AdMob, the mobile advertising agency. Google snagged them. That mustn't feel too good. AdMob had agreed to a 45-day no-shop provision while Apple was conducting due diligence. But after Apple let the 45 days pass, Google snapped them up.
So it sounds like the anger existed before Schmidt left the board.
Exactly.
And as soon as
he
left...
That's what this article... It became
Steve,
public.
Steve could stop being nice about it in public, anyway.
One of the most interesting things about this is that Google almost never picks sides. So, I mean... For example, Google has somebody on the HTML5 stat, like, which is the biggest challenger to Adobe's video stance on the web. But they're also partnering with Adobe to like figure out how to improve Adobe's video product. In all of these different sections, they try and like be this like nice guy. We're not going to pick one side, one team or the other, but it's clear that there's something brewing between Apple and Google, and that Google is taking a stand, and they're behind HTC, and they have a position in mobile.
Is there a clear winner here? Who wins in an Apple-Google cage match?
Well, that's the weird part, is how do you extract the two? I mean, it's like, could Google just not be supported on the iPhone? I mean, could they just yank out of all the Googleness in there? Or?
Well, remember, we heard rumors. I don't know if there were rumors or true. I'm starting to think maybe it was true that Apple was talking to Microsoft about putting Bing on the iPhone instead of Google as its default search. That would be a huge blow.
Yeah.
And now I believe it. I didn't believe it at the time. I thought, oh, that's not going to... That could.
That's like that scene in Pirates of Silicon Valley when Bill Gates shows up on the screen with, you know, Microsoft Office for the Mac. You know, you'd see,
that
you'd
was
see
creepy,
Bing
wasn't it?
At a keynote with Steve Jobs recommending it. That'd be... It's almost unthinkable. Yeah.
It damages Apple, doesn't it?
What, the whole conflict?
The lawsuits damage Apple, I think.
I think so. I think it damages the reputation, and it also, you know, it's like, what did they expect? Did they expect that everyone would just stand back while the iPhone just ran away? Right. And I want to know what they've been doing with their lead for the last 2 years, because it's like, I'm looking at the Droid, I'm looking at the Google Nexus One, and it's like, what are you guys doing, Apple?
You know, I remember talking to Steve Jobs when he was at Pixar about Apple's lead with Macintosh. He said, we had a 10-year lead on Microsoft, and we let it slip away, and in 10 years they came out with Windows 95, and it was all over. He was very clear that you cannot let these technology leads go slip. You've got to stay ahead.
It's like, I mean, I'm looking at... Oh, no, go ahead.
I was just going to say you can't sit back and rely on your patent library.
Yeah.
To keep people out of the market. And that's where it hurts them, is they start to look really anti-competitive because they're trying to get injunctions against even selling these phones or importing them into the United States. That's just ludicrous.
Maybe it's a side effect of how monstrous their lead was early on, both from a technological standpoint and from a perception standpoint. I mean, they were standing so far out of the crowd. Maybe it's very attractive to just, you know, do your profit taking at that time. But meanwhile, it's like it's been, what, almost 3 years now, and this is virtually identical to what I stood in line for.
Exactly. Everybody has told me, because I switched to the Nexus One, and everybody said, oh, you'll switch back when iPhone 4 comes out. Well, I'll be curious.
Waiting to hear about it.
Yeah, let's hear about iPhone 4. What is that
going to
be?
Yeah, is there an iPhone 4? Is it going to be a significant advance? I don't feel, you know, the rumor level... supports, you know, we don't have crazy enough rumors to support
a decent
advance.
This is a case of iPad distraction where it takes them away from their core focus.
How many of you ordered iPads?
Not me.
They went Robert Scoble. Thank you very much. Robert did. I ordered four.
You can only
order two at a time, so I had my henchman order two.
Leo, we're going to have a party April 2nd, Palo Alto store.
I'll be there.
All night long.
You know, I don't think there'll be lines, though, because you can order for delivery on Saturday.
There won't be lines, but there will be parties.
I'll be there. No, I don't like to do that because it looks like I'm cheerleading for the device, and I really don't want to cheerlead for the device. I ordered four because, well, first of all, we have to give one to Lisa Tickled Pink, and by the way, that has succeeded beyond my wildest dreams. In fact, Lisa, I think, is in love with me now. Lisa, this was a Kevin Rose picture out of a hat, basically. A Twitter user who had just signed up, had three followers, had only tweeted once, and her tweet was, I hate technology. Kevin searched for that, and he found her, and we, you know, because of Conan, we decided that we would do what Conan did. He followed, what was her name, Lonely Little Toe. I can't remember it was. Lonely Button.
I just remember Brian Brinkman.
Lovely Button, who is now, I think, at 27,000 followers. But it's a horse race because Lisa Tickled Pink, since our show last week, in 1 week, has 22,677 followers.
Wow.
And she's totally, I feel lucky she's totally into it.
You know what I love? I love not only that you're doing this, but I love that you saying that got the kind of response as if you said, and she won the lottery.
I know,
well, she cured cancer.
She did. She got
wow, now she has a lot of literal net rude replies all the time to her tweet. What?
She did it first, you know. People were a little mean, and now she has a lot of friends, and she's actually really excited about it. I actually talked to her. A Kiwi radio station brought her in, and I Skyped in, and we talked, and I apologized, and and she was very nice about it. She's a design student in Auckland, New Zealand. She's got a project that she thinks this actually helps promote, and she started to really enjoy the fact that she's got this
audience. What you're saying is she's drunk with power now, is what you're saying.
And she's going to get an iPad. So one of those four I ordered will be shipped to her immediately on April 3rd. And then the other one will go to one of her followers. We'll pick at random from all of her followers on April 3rd and give an iPad to one of them. So that counts for two of them. Then one is for me.
Now, what are you? What surprises are you hoping for from the iPad?
Well, I don't think there'll be many surprises. I think what's going to be surprising to people who haven't touched it. I've held it. You held it, Molly, right? You didn't get a chance to play with it. Tom, did you get a chance to play? Oh, so
universally though, everyone who's touched it says they love it,
and universally, I think that's where the surprise will be. Is when people get it, they go, "Oh yeah, I get what you're saying." It's not just a blown up iPod Touch. It really is something that happens when that screen gets to that size and the touch interface.
It's when you get infected by the bugs by touching it.
But we'll see. You know, I'm not cheerleading for it. I think it's going to be a successful product,
and I hope I'm surprised, but I'm very, very skeptical right now.
It'll be interesting to see, and we'll find out.
My thing is that I already have a laptop that I'm going to bring around with me, and I write for a living, so
you're not going to write on that.
Yeah, I'm not going to want to write. I can't like use this to replace my laptop in any scenario. When I'm watching a movie and then I'll switch over, I'll write a blog. Oh no, not on the screen.
Here's what I hope it is it's that original iPod effect. When the iPod first came out, people were it was just clunky enough that people were like, I don't get it. And it wasn't until it got svelter and more useful and started adding, you know, little things like games, like, oh no, I get it. And then it became the must-have thing for everyone. Maybe this first generation is just to get the ball rolling.
But I still don't think that it's what Apple needs to do to maintain the iPhone.
Exactly.
Lead.
I think
and
it's very
detrimental.
And that
iPad distraction point is really good. Because even as good as the iPad's going to be, it's not going to sell like the iPhone did.
No.
Even if it's the perfect device.
And where are the new Macs? Where are the new MacBooks? We haven't seen new notebooks. They're way overdue. There's an Intel chip that I thought Apple would jump on, the Arendelle chipset.
You know, this is a mistake that I remember feeling like Microsoft made a decade or two ago, where it's like, you guys are too diverse. It's like, I don't know what Microsoft means anymore. It means video games and broken OSs.
Well, I think what it seems clear is Apple's moving in the consumer space, and they are less interested. And I was very worried about this. In the Macintosh and OS X is less compelling for them. It's not as profitable. Can't control it. It's more open. There's a lot of profit to be made in the closed ecosystem built around an iPhone, iPod, and iPad.
Yeah,
I think that's where Apple. It's going to be a consumer electronics company. So, Brian, tell us about the scam that you did last night. How's that going?
That was quite a night last night, wasn't there?
You devil.
I think it's all a bad dream. I don't know what happened last night.
Well, first of all, did you guys already talk about Leo crowd surfing last night at the Dig Nation?
A little bit.
Yeah,
that was
fun. That was amazing.
That was hilarious.
We had our friends from the Universal Records database. And what's funny is the folks at Revision 3, they knew I was doing the Scam School Live, and they said, hey, have you heard of the Universal Records database? Which, for those who don't know, is basically like the Wikipedia of world records.
I got a patch. I broke a record last night for the world's longest crowd surfing live stream.
That's awesome. That's
nice.
Awesome.
I think it's the only crowd surfing live stream.
Well, and that's the thing is you can't have a record for the only or the first. I guess
it's
you could have
longest.
It for the only. So you got to have a definable aspect to it. And the standards for evidence are you just got to have some video, have your friend take a video or whatever. But if there's not an existing category, you can make up the category. And as long as it's approved, you could get world records.
So you broke some world records last night.
Yes. In fact, I stole Jimmy Fallon's record for the most drawn on mustaches in 30 seconds. I went all up and down the front of the line and just I
How
drew
many?
26 mustaches
oh, man.
In 30 seconds.
So you mean there are people walking around today with the Sharpie mustache?
Yes, actually, for the rest of the night they wanted to take pictures with me and they had these big dirty Sanchez. But
wait a minute, I've got to look that up.
No, you don't.
No,
No.
Urban Dictionary.
Definitely
right?
Do not no? Look that up. Okay. No.
So but what happened was is they said we want to do something with the URDB. You're clever, creative. Come up with something. And Justin, my co-host from NSFW, we started banging around ideas.
Come on over here,
Justin, and of course Brett Rounceville, the Amtrekker. But we got as far as like, and I remember the moment was it was wait, it's got to be some kind of hoax on Twitter. Like we say something happens, but it didn't. And then we remembered the whole you know everybody at this moment super loves Conan O'Brien, especially right. On the internet. Revision 3 had just made a job offer to Conan O'Brien, which may have been a little bit tongue-in-cheek. But we said we wanted to perpetrate the largest online live event Twitter hoax ever and have everybody claim that Conan O'Brien just walked out on stage and announced that he was coming to Revision 3, right?
Yeah, well, because if there's anything that is going to get just absolutely bombed, especially when, and there's a great video, I forget who put it up, but when we're on stage and we're telling people, and it was from the VIP area, and they kind of swoop down through the crowd, and you just see all these, like, these light up, almost like stars in the sky.
Lighting up in the crowd.
All through the darkened crowd. And it was trending on Twitter within...
Within 3 minutes, it was trending on Twitter, and we had to be able to track it. So we had everyone put the hashtag OMGConan in there. It was trending within 3 minutes. Within 10 minutes, Ryan Vance, VP of Revision 3, had gotten congratulation calls from two executives.
The coup of the century!
And within 15 minutes, we found a tweet out there that said, just got off the phone with Conan, confirmed this is a hoax. So it's it's
poor
insane.
Conan got woken up in the middle of the night.
Which the funniest part about that is that our crazy internet hoax, we've repeated this and said that, you know, Conan got called and he woke up and that's crazy. Yay!
Doesn't matter. But by the same time,
we just believe something on the internet.
Yeah.
So it's like, this could in itself be a hoax. And by the end of it, it was reported on, where was it, Tube Filter?
Yeah, and that, CNET did an article on the hoax or whatever. Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
But even then, it's like the whole telephone game of it. Is, number one, halfway through it, Conan was buying Revision 3. and then also...
And as of morning, as of this morning, we could confirm Conan is actually buying the internet.
Yes.
Right here.
There we go.
Congratulations, Conan.
Yes.
So it says 426 tweets, but it must have been more than that because there were about 3,400 people there.
And it was, I mean, that was like, I think that's how many happened like right as we said
right.
It.
And then we streamed it live, and I encouraged the live stream also to participate.
Awesome. So. And that was my favorite part about it was that people watching... And everybody in the crowd, there was nobody who wanted to spoil the event.
I went through it. I was just like, these jerks are telling lies. Not one person.
No.
And the article, the CNET article, clearly is like, some people think this is you know, not a good thing to do. Well, up yours. It's funny. And
Now, have you seen the Screw You SXSW Twitter account?
No. What are they saying?
Yes. That is interesting. That one replied me the other day. It's purports to be... A wife who's angry that her husband went to South by Southwest on what is their anniversary weekend.
Yeah.
But so it's this kind of ongoing. But you know, she seems a little in the know is all I'm saying. Like her.
Oh, you think it's not real?
Her critiques are very biting.
Yeah.
So if she were really just the average kind of pissed off wife, I don't feel like she would be so. But she's like, oh, look, I just cracked open another bottle of wine and everybody cracked open their douchebag tags on Foursquare, whatever. Like, she seems kind of plugged in, is
maybe,
all I'm saying.
Maybe this one is Jason Calacanis, too, like the unnamed songs.
He's just mad
so
about it.
So has anybody
it's
found
mean,
the
though.
Husband? That's what I want to know.
I know. I want to know who the husband is.
Yeah.
Find that husband. I'm really not telling husband. Anyone.
I think that this person is just hoping to get on CNN.
Doesn't it seem just kind of selectively anonymous, though? Like, you know, if she really wanted to get at him, that you could bring up some nasty stuff or, you know, yeah. I don't know.
I'm not buying it. She did ask me, she asked me some question, and I was like, move along, sweetie. I think she's just searching on the hashtags, you know. So she asked me, I think on my bio I said that, you know, I was a minor internet celebrity. She goes, what does that mean in the big scheme of things, Mollywood? And I was like, nothing sweetie.
This woman is clearly a social media consultant.
She is, yeah. Like, she obviously is.
Pretty
right?
Pretty obvious.
She's one of the new 9,000 gurus, yeah.
Speaking of social media, you know today is Pi Day, right?
Happy Pi Day.
Did you guys already talk about that?
Alright, let's see. I'm gonna have a little competition to see who can name pi to the most places here on the panel.
I'm
out.
Three.
Justin says I can't.
3.147.
3.14159.
Oh, look, they totally gave you the no.
3.14159. But there's a mnemonic that I learned. How I want to drink alcoholic, of course, after the heavy chapters on quantum mechanics. That'll get you out to nine places if you do the number of letters in each of those words.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So and describe everybody's weekend.
Yes. So check this out. We're actually doing, I'm trying to break one more record with the Universal Record Database. By the way, I just saw the picture of the avatar for Screw Yourself.
Yeah, well, she's bitter.
You should read the bio. It's a lot of fun.
If you go to the website, PiDayMagic.com, I got approached by a mathematician out of Cambridge University who completely fooled me with a magic trick that's completely math-based, and we'll teach how it's done later. But I was completely fooled. He's like, you can do this over Twitter, and it takes about like 2 minutes to watch
the
video.
Play this video?
Well, this is the long version. But you can kind of scoot it forward to where we explain how to do the trick. If you want to try it at home, basically, in fact, I'll just describe what you do if you want to play along. What you do is you generate a giant number somewhere between 1 million and 1 billion on your calculator by multiplying single digits one at a time. So like 3 times, 5 times, 6 times, 8 times, 10. So you get a big, fat, giant random number.
All right. Look, can we all do this at home?
Yeah, sure. Everybody. Yeah, go ahead and do this.
We'll get out our calculator.
Will it work if I use random.org? Do I have to do it on the calc?
No, do it on the calc. Pay attention to the instructions, Merritt. Come on.
Yeah, don't mess around, man. This
right. Once you've got a giant number.
I'm the guy who likes to hack the hack.
Single digit numbers.
Right, right. And you want to make it as diverse as you can.
And how big does it have to get?
Anywhere between a million and a billion. 6, 7, 8, 9 digits.
32,167. I got 1 million.
You don't even need to tell me what it is. See, that's the best part. That's okay. Out of all those numbers,
yeah.
Pick one of those to be your secret number.
Okay.
Now we're doing it in person. So just you tell me right now, what are the other digits besides
the
yours?
Other digits?
Yeah, every other digit except for the one you
all
just
right,
said.
The other digits are 113000.
You are thinking of the number 4.
Whoa!
All right. But here's the best part. We've set up a script so that now all you do, tweet out all the digits except for your secret digit and use the hashtag PiDayMagic, and I will DM you what secret number you're thinking of. But you have to follow at Schwood in order to get the DM, or at James Grime, the guy who came up with this to me. But it's awesome. Like, literally, I sit there and I'm watching the script, and like, this is the way I want to do magic in the future, where I just sit there, computer
does all the work,
and people clap for me. It's awesome.
Autonomous magic.
You
want to
do bot magic?
That's right.
Yes. Wow.
But it's very,
somebody
very cool.
Somebody have botmagic.com.
Right. Okay,
we should get
one,
that.
Guys. Don't show him the number.
Oh, come on. It works. I do it. It works all the time. Just do it online. Do it on Twitter.
In case anyone's wondering, multiplying the lost numbers as single digits isn't long enough.
Somebody did that.
I did.
Yeah, of course he did.
But to be fair, James Grime, Brian's partner in crime on this one, directly at Reply Me to let me know what my number
now,
was.
What does this
anyway.
Have to do with Pi?
Well, Pi Day is a celebration of all things mathematical, and that's one of the things. James Grime is a mathematician at Cambridge, and he actually tours. He's got one of the original Enigma machines, the encrypting machines, and he does a stage show to promote math awareness, and so he wanted to do a special event to promote mathematics and show how you could do some kick-ass tricks with math, and the best part is we're going to teach exactly how to do this trick in an upcoming episode of Scam School.
Ah, the plug for Scam School.
Yeah.
It was only a matter of time.
Who did not see that coming?
Me?
Come on.
All right. Brian Rushwood is the host of Scam School, and you can watch it on Revision 3 at revision3.com/scamschool. Is
yes,
that right?
Yes, but more importantly, we're hosting NSFW right here on the Twit Network.
Yes, indeed.
As a matter of fact, we just confirmed we're going to have Drew from Blame Drew's Cancer on coming up.
Oh, he's great. Drew
Baratunde is confirmed. He's going to come on.
That's great. Yeah. And what day do you do that show? Tuesday
nights at 10 p.m. Eastern.
If you want to watch live.
Yeah,
you can, of course,
watching,
get the podcast.
Watching live is where you get to actually be part of the mischief and actually, some of the best parts of the show are where an appropriate link will show up in the chat room and all of a sudden take us in a complete new direction.
Involving dolphins, perhaps?
Hey, listen, every once in a while, it's like when they make food at a factory. You know, you can't avoid getting the random
floor.
Dolphin.
You can't avoid opening up chat roulette and seeing something that can't be unseen.
I've done that as well.
That was the funniest thing is when that happened, like, there was just some solid joke. It's like, at least it happened to Leo, like, 3 days ago.
That's true. It actually, maybe we could get one of those little badges for a world record for the most penises the Twit Network in 1 week.
To be fair, I don't want to split hairs here, but there was not an actual penis on our show because it was covered by a dolphin.
Really? I heard there was.
Well,
somebody used the phrase Abraham Lincoln.
I don't even know what that means.
I don't know.
That sounds like some maneuver that's way complicated.
Justin and Schwood are on NSFW. Make sure you watch that show Tuesdays.
I can vouch that it is the most fun you can have after 5 p.m. with an Ethernet cable.
Oh, yeah. Dude. Yeah, that's from Tom Merritt, our first, our
Mr.
most
Tomas
often.
Marie,
yeah, who most has, common guest. Yeah,
pronounce it correctly,
the,
Brian.
The winner, the winner of our non-Olympic affiliated winner games. Winner games.
Winner.
Yeah, we had our own.
You couldn't afford the tea.
Yeah.
No.
We couldn't afford the lawsuit if we said the Olympics.
And I would have been the one sued. So I thank you for that. Mark Millian is a writer at the L.A. Times. It's great to see you, Mark.
Great to
is
see
this
you.
Your, this is your first South by Southwest because you're only 12. I have to get in the obligatory youthful joke.
Very true.
At Mark's expense.
This
but
is
no,
my
it's,
first. I'm loving it.
That's exciting. It's fun, isn't it?
Oh,
mine
so
too.
Great.
Mine too. I'm really having a blast. It's really a lot of fun. Thank you for being here. We appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
Anything you want to plug?
LATimes.com/tech and heyniceblog.com.
Hey Nice
that
Blog.
That is the best name ever.
Yeah. And your producer is hey.com. That's
I know,
an
isn't that
awesome
strange?
Domain.
Yeah.
He's being redesigned right now. It'll be up it's,
he's, shortly. He's got one of the few three letter domain names.
Wow.
It's pretty exciting. Yeah. Molly Wood is a host of course, Buzz Out Loud. Welcome back to Buzz Out Loud. It's great to have you back
Thank
on
you.
The show. You just
nice.
You just really it's such a great show with you.
Thanks.
And Tom, of course, and Jason. And her Molly Rants column is at cnet.com/Molly-Rants. Mm-hmm. Tom Merritt is the maitre d' at Buzz Out Loud. He wears a tuxedo every day.
Can I get you a tech story?
Yes, thank you. bol.cnet.com and cnettv.com also.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And anything else I need to say? Thanks, oh yes, of course, to the folks at the Texas Co-working Center who provided us the space to do this show, to all the people who came out. Paul, we really appreciate it. This has been a fun place to do the show. Thanks to the folks at New Tech, Shane Condren and gang, who did a great job of switching this, and everybody's saying it's the best-looking twit we've ever done because it's the first high-def twit we've ever done. So
wow.
Maybe nice if we could do more of these. One of these days we'll upgrade maybe to the TriCaster HD. That's an amazing device they're using there to switch. And you know what's great? It's an expensive... inexpensive cameras they're using, and just the camcorders are just standard consumer DV cameras, and yet we get better, you know, grade quality video than we get at home with very expensive cameras. Also to Michael Sean Wright, Michael, we really appreciate everything you do of nicefishfilms.com, and he helped set this all up. In fact, he's been using this space. We're using his space, really. So we thank you, Michael. Thanks to everybody who came out. Sorry you had to stand the whole time, but we appreciate your being here. Another twit. He's in the can.
DB just called. We just got the most awkwardly long clap award.
Service Pack 1. Service Pack 2.
Service Pack 2.
Let's grant that.
Firewall.